Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, a brace from Kyogo Furusmashi denies Michael Beale's Beale-leavers. Liam Fox bounces. Ronnie Costello from the Dodie Fox podcast joins us later. And Darren Fletcher, we've got to talk about Jack, my man. A warm welcome to you listeners joining me on the podcast. She's senior football producer for West Ham. It's Laura Brannan.
Hello.
Hello, Laura. And also, he's a football filmmaker. He likes to smash some buttons, but not the chocolate ones. Similar link to last week. But hello there, Findlay Marks.
Hello. Just to reiterate again, I do absolutely smash chocolate buttons. I think they're a terrific confectionery treat.
Wow.
Just want that cleared up.
Deja vu, clearing it up for the second pod in a row. Laura, how was your weekend? With me!
It was good. I spent the day with you in the pub. So it was happy day. It wasn't just you, though. Who else did I see in the pub, Andrew?
You saw my daughter, Molly. You saw my girlfriend. And I saw Grant.
Yeah, I also saw Jamie Theakston.
Oh, yeah, so you did. for live and kicking. And what else, Laura?
Just live and kicking. It's just me from 1997. So I was about 10 years old. Jamie Theakston, Zoe Ball, live and kicking. I was slightly fangirling as he sat and watched Man United win the Carabao Cup in the corner.
Yeah, the thing is, I saw him first, Laura, and then told you just kind of nonchalantly, and you lost the plot. You were like, what, Jamie Theakston from Live and Kicking? Are you serious? He's actually here. Where is he? And I pointed to him and you were like, I'm just going to walk in that direction. And kind of like, and you came back and you were like, we made eye contact.
I can confirm this happened. This is exactly what happened. I don't think you were expecting that reaction, were you?
No, I really didn't.
See, when you work with footballers all your life, right? You kind of have to fangirl over something else.
This is what I was going to ask. I was like, all of us work in the industry where we're around, you know, like famous footballers and celebrities and pundits and stuff like that all the time. And most of it is just your job. So you just get on with it. But I love hearing when people who work around celebrities and stuff like that all the time freak out about people that maybe other people would just be like, sorry, who's that? Because like, who's the best person you've ever kind of like unintentionally fangirled about?
I can tell you one of the oddest moments for me was meeting Sir Trevor Brooking. Now, my job was just to collect him and bring him into BT Sports Studios. So I'd met him outside and I was like, all right, Trevor, come on, the studio's inside. Well, we're chatting away, he's perfectly pleasant. But when I get inside, everyone starts going like, Sir Trevor Brooking, how are you? Sir Trevor Brooking, it's a pleasure to meet you. And I was like, Trev, come on. Hurry up. I've got time to keep to.
Big men are up from the back. El Mahoney, right foot. Whipshot. Oh, jeezy peeps, man.
Right, before we get stuck into all the kind of Scottish football news, did anyone see the new MLS 360 show at the weekend?
Cannot confirm nor deny, but no.
Because this is class, right? The only reason I'm bringing this up is just because the way it's done, I'm so jealous and I wish we could get this in Scottish football. If anyone didn't see it, so basically it was this first weekend of the new MLS season and they've brought in the new show on Apple TV, which is essentially, if you've ever seen it on Bundesliga, they do the same for the German top flight. It is basically Soccer Saturday or Open All Mics, but you visually get to see the show. It's like the goal show you get on BT Sport on European nights. You've got the studio and they're jumping about the different games and they're showing you as it happens, goals going in and chances. And it's so exciting. And I was up till about 2 in the morning watching this on Saturday nights and Sunday morning. I just really wish that we could have this sort of thing for all 4 divisions in Scotland at the same time. I think it would be class.
All 4 divisions?
Well, you know, we could do the top flight, but, you know, why not just get them all involved?
That would be utter madness to do all four divisions.
You're having nightmares being a producer on that, aren't you?
Well, as you saw on Thursday, I've been doing the goal show since day one on BT Sport, but to do all four divisions would cost an absolute packet.
All right, okay, we'll do the top flight, and then we might span out to the championship as well, okay?
But hold on, this opens up the debate about the whole 3 o'clock kind of blackout period of, like, you just cannot show domestic football on this island from 3 o'clock to, I think, 5:30 or five o'clock. Sorry, it's 5 o'clock, right? So, and it's kind of an agreement that's been in for decades.
It's an absolute farce.
It isn't. I mean, I know we've spoken about it before, and we've pulled the data out and stuff like that. But the thing that you probably could do differently is avoid Saturdays. So pick a Friday night where you put all of your top flight football on a Friday night, two nights a season, and you could promote a program. There you go. Just thought of it. There you go. Friday night 360 Scottish football. We can't make it, Laura, because we don't own the rights.
Well, we can in 2029, okay? We've got a few years to get together our new company, take over, buy the rights. 2029, we'll be doing it.
And then what will happen is it'll be on BBC Alba and we won't understand a thing that's going on.
But we'll hear the excitement anyway, so it'll still be good fun.
It's a great idea, because the whole premise of, if you know NFL Red Zone as well, if you're an American football fan, it's the exact same content. If you watch BT Sport Goal Show on a Champions League, or we just did it on Thursday there for the Europa League and Europa Conference League, and you are just flying in the incidents, and you've got the amazing messers that are James Richardson, James Horncastle, Rafa Honigstein, Julian Laurens, who are all just journalists that know the background stories, who are better than us about talking about football, but they've got so much insider knowledge talking about what's going on, and their rapport and friendship is wonderful. So if we did have something like that in Scottish football, it is amazing, absolutely amazing programme to work on.
I didn't actually see any of the MLS stuff, but the...
Finn, I can't even work out what time that would be for you. That melts my brain trying to work out that time difference.
Probably be about 3 days in the past, but... It's really interesting, just because I haven't watched much MLS, but I have been noticing the way that they're packaging the game and marketing it. And like you're saying, Laura, I'm just really jealous of it, because I think it's brilliant the way that they're doing that. And obviously living in Melbourne, living in Australia, the way that the A-leagues go about trying to promote their game as well, I'm massively a fan of, because I think the thing that both the MLS and the A-leagues do, and these are leagues that I think know their place in the pecking order, you know, they're not sought out like the Premier League or Bundesliga or a lot of the European leagues, but they know the strength that they have in the marketing of their game, and what they're brilliant at is selling the league as a whole. Maybe it's something because, you know, that a lot of the teams that are involved aren't old teams in the way that we would think of them from the UK, you know, teams that are like 150 odd years or 130 odd years old. And these are teams or franchises that in some cases could be like 2 years old. But it means that they market the league as a whole. They don't market it as, you know, by default we kind of do in Scotland, which is just the old firm obviously is in a pedestal way, way up high. But then, you know, we do talk about the Premier League. We do talk about certain teams from certain cities. But what they're brilliant is bringing parity to the teams from the A-League, from the MLS, and that way of bigging up the whole league all at once. And I think we're not good at doing that in Scotland. And it's one of those things where I'm only going on personal experience here, but a lot of people, and I find this quite sad, a lot of people find it quite unusual that I am both a Rangers fan and also a fan of Scottish football, that like my interest in football in Scotland does not begin and end in Govan. Like I have a genuine interest and affection for the game at all levels in Scotland, and I'm so passionate about that, and that might be unusual, but that's the way it is, and that's the kind of thing I want to do. I think both things can coexist. I think Scottish football fans sometimes think, oh, I can't be interested in the rest of the game because it makes me less of a fan of my own side. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think you can have both things richly held at the same time. You can support your club fervently and enjoy that, but you can enjoy the experience of the rest of the league going on round about it. And I think if you can get to a point where you are promoting the game like the MLS do, like the A-leagues do, where you're promoting the league as a whole, as a united front, and you're doing it warts and all. It's, you know, it's the tackles and the red cards and the bad things that happen in the game, not just the good stuff that you're trying to usher out. That's where it becomes a much more united entity, and it's something that's actually much more marketable to places outside of the already existing markets.
It is a great idea, but I don't think I'll see it for a very long time, sadly. I hope I'm wrong. I do really do hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong about Partick Thistle, because if I'm led to believe, if they reach the playoffs, they are scrambling to get extensions on players' contracts. They could end up playing the playoffs with a very different team than what got them there. It's unbelievable. This happens every season in Scottish football, where some teams probably definitely aiming for promotion, but these contracts end just as the playoffs start to kick off, and then these teams have to scramble to get these contracts extended. It's absolute chaos, guys.
How are they not noticing these days? Like, all the contracts end 31st of May and they've not looked at the fixture diary. There's two playoff games on the 1st and 4th of June. And who are you going to play? They're now scrambling around trying to get some 5-day extension onto contracts just in case they're in the playoff final.
The thing is, they no team wants to pay more than they need to, right? So that is one reason. And the conversations will be being had, and if they have to, it will be sorted. But it's just one of those headlines that rears its ugly head every season. These teams are aware of this. It's just a bit odd as well. Just very, very bizarre. Anyone else happen to have a really fun weekend?
Did you see the random Celtic fan in the crowd at Hampden who had full on rocket launcher?
How did he get that in there? Right, is the security at Hampden the same as like some of these nightclubs in like, you know, Ayrshire and stuff like that? I remember going to, you know, when you're in high school and they try and do the like these like anti-drug or anti-social behavior kind of like initiatives or whatever. I remember they would like take you in a room and show you like a bin full of knives and be like, all of these have been confiscated by the police in the last year. And you're like, how did somebody get like a 6-foot machete inside their jacket and try and smuck, thinking, I'll just put it inside the leg of my trouser. I'm sure I'll get it in the club to stab a guy. You're like, what's
going
on?
It looks bigger than that. It looks bigger than that. Is it like...
Oh, the rocket was huge.
This is part of like some sort of pyro display that they had at the Celtic end. And this guy's obviously launching flares, but I just don't understand. Like I'm first in the whole man's obviously, I'm literally amazing, but I just don't understand how he gets it in past security. I'm impressed. If he wants to come along to the Scotland games next month, I'm not officially saying that in any capacity, of course. No, we're going to try and get more TIFOs organised for the Euro 2024 qualifying campaigns.
Amazing.
So, because you're a member of the Tartan Army, right, Laura? That's one of your remits. You're a party influencer.
Yeah, so the part of the group that we're in, it's not an official Tartan Army group, it's just a group of fans that have had experience with making TIFOs at different clubs around Scotland, that for the playoff game against Ukraine last year, we all sort of got together and went, right, what can we do for Scotland here? We've not really got that sort of culture at Hampden for Scotland games. We want to try and create this. It's a slow burner. We know it's not going to happen overnight. None of these sort of kind of supporter groups the clubs have just now, they didn't happen overnight. It takes time, and we did it for the Ukraine game where we raised money and did a full TIFO of flags that were in the shape of a salt tire, and that was for the North Stand as the boys walked out of the tunnel. It looked class. It spurred us on to victory, wouldn't you? But it looked amazing, and we'd like to just kind of push on now for the next campaign and do something that can help build that kind of noise and atmosphere at Hampden. We've started raising money for it. If you go on Twitter, we're at Scotland TIFO, or just search for Scotland TIFO group. And on there, you'll get all the links to PayPal, to GoFundMe. There's different various ways you can donate money. Any sort of pennies at all can make a difference. We're not wedded to exactly which game we're doing or how much we do. It's just a case of like, the more we make, the bigger and better. And more often we can do these displays. We'd love to kind of kickstart it for the Cyprus game, but we're just going to take it as it goes. We know there's not a lot of time before this one, but like, if anyone wants to kind of join in and help out, then come on board, because we want to make it look as amazing as possible.
Suppose one person that won't be investing any of their pocket money in it will be Darren Fletcher's son, Jack, will he? Did you guys see this?
Oh my God. This is
I did. Darren Fletcher, if you're listening, what is going on with your children?
Yeah, we need to talk about this, don't we?
So a number of months ago, we were talking about Angus Gunn, the son of Brian Gunn, who's Scottish and a former Scotland international cap goalkeeper. And the kind of debate of whether or not it should be entertained for him potentially coming back into the Scotland fold because of the injury to Craig Gordon. And I think unanimously, we didn't feel particularly warm to that idea of somebody who'd continually tried to establish himself as an England international full cap and had played at all the youth levels for England, potentially changing to play for Scotland. But it seems, yeah, Darren Fletcher, not just any old Scottish international, like he's a former captain and a Hall of Famer with over 50 caps. So it's not just anybody, but his son, well, we should say actually technically one of his sons, Jack, not only is playing for the Man City Academy, obviously a rival academy of the team is that, it's a legend that, but he was also playing this week for England against Scotland at under 16 level. So yeah,
and not just against Scotland, his twin.
Playing against his twin brother.
So his twin, Tyler, was playing for Scotland. And the weird thing was, there's reports from November, just a few months ago, where Tyler was getting poached for England and it was Jack who hadn't made his mind up yet. Now, unless these reports have got a wee bit confused along the way, it looks like both sons have just done a whole 360 here, because Tyler was playing for Scotland and Jack was pulling on the three lines. Darren, what were you doing? What went wrong here in the upbringing here of these kids? Where were you sitting, Darren?
Just to give you a little bit of context, though, like this happens a lot if you've got dual nationalities and you can play for multiple countries. Like, in all fairness, you look at the likes of like Jack Grealish and Declan Rice. They were playing for Ireland, Republic of Ireland, for a long time and decided to, you know.
No, I mean, look at John and Harry Souter as well. So close to home.
Another player people might remember is Karamoko Dembele was playing for England and Scotland when he was like 14, 15 as well. You know, it is a case of it's best to kind of see all your cards. Look at both setups. No. Look at this professional football. These are professionals and they're, you know, if they want to work with the best possible coaches, they'll decide who they think is the best possible coaches.
I'm sorry, international football is not about playing for the best possible coaches. That's so insulting.
This isn't like, you know, born into a football supporting family and whoever your dad supports, that's who you should
be. No, it's more serious than that. You're born into a country, you're born into a nationality. You're stuck with that whether you like it or not. You can choose your team, you can't choose your nationality.
I may have a daughter who is English, born in London, and I will be the first to say that if she decides to play for England, she will never get a single penny out of me again. but I will not deny anyone the opportunity at this stage, at a young age. Look, what is it? I can't remember what age you need to be. But when you're a professional footballer, there comes a point where you make your decision. And as soon as you play your first professional cap for your nationality, that's you stuck.
Andrew, with all due respect to your little girl who's really cute, by the way. You're not.
Thanks very much.
You're not a former Scotland captain, so there's not sort of the same pressure there. I will argue till the cows come home about how you represent your country and how you choose your allegiances and all that. But it's the fact that his dad's a former Scotland captain. There's something's went a wee bit wrong there. What was he doing when he was playing games? Was he even born then? Why did one son choose to be Scottish and one chose not to be?
It's a good laugh.
He's a rebel child. He's clearly a rebel child.
A problem child indeed. Oh my goodness, Jack.
I say rebel child, but you put problem child into my mouth.
Well, there you go. Yeah, probably thinking about Jake Paul too much. Ugh, why? Who knows? They could be, absolute formidable agents for Scotland in years to come.
Here's hoping.
Let's hope so anyway.
McGregor, Moy, Hatate beyond him. It's Hatate across. Kyogo again. A double-double in the final for Kyogo. And it might just be Celtic Silver Line Sunday.
Celtic do what they've shown they do best and lifted another trophy under Ange Postecoglou. Ange has always done better at clubs in his second season. Is this a stick-on season for them to reach another treble, guys? Celtic, for me, watching this with you, Laura, it felt like the better team won. But I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, it really was just sort of business as usual. Get in there, get it done, and let's go home. that was sort of the kind of feel of it all. There wasn't really any kind of controversy. There wasn't really any sort of drama. Not really what a kind of neutral wants. It was just sort of very much of this era where it's just Celtic are very compact, very to the point, very precise, very good. And they just didn't really, like, we saw Rangers maybe kind of showed it for about 15 minutes where you were like, right, they're actually coming back into this year. We're going to get a game out of it. And it just sort of dwindled away. And it kind of got to the stage of the kind of last 20 minutes, you're thinking, just give them the cup, because this isn't really going any other way apart from back to Celtic Park. Fan, I imagine you've got a whole rant planned for this to kind of dissect the Rangers' performance here, but nothing from the Celtic performance blew me away. It was just very much business as usual. And well done to them, because they've absolutely nailed on the success right now. They've got it absolutely spot on what they want to do.
They definitely got it spot on the day, because Rangers did not come out with any sort of, not so much a plan, but belief, really, for me. Looking at that, Celtic coasted to 2-0. Although it took them a little while, they scored at a really important time just before halftime. And then Kyogo with another very similar finish as well. Which, when you look at, again, like, the defending of it is utterly just disgusting from Rangers. These are the moments of quality Celtic punish teams all over the league. They're just so good at cutting teams apart when you give them an opportunity. And Kyogo is just a master of being that fox in the box right there when you need him. He's such a good player. That's why he's the top goal scorer in the league. And he deservedly won it for Ange Postecoglou. But for Rangers fans, this was under Michael Beale. It's his first defeat as manager. This is kind of a worrying time for them, looking ahead to a summer where they've got 9 people to replace potentially, maybe not with the type of money that Celtic are going to have. But Finn, they do have the Scottish Cup to look forward to, but maybe you're going to absolutely rip them to shreds more than I have.
I think Michael Beale, quite rightly, since he's come in, has received a lot of praise, given that, you know, he's only dropped 1 point since he'd come in, which I think is quite impressive given the state of disarray the team were in under Van Bronckhorst before the World Cup break. I don't think you can look at it any other way than he got his lineup entirely wrong on Sunday. I think, not that you can ever completely go with something like go off Twitter, but you can usually get a pretty healthy gauge of, in general, how a supporter are feeling before, during and after games. And I can't ever really remember a time where I've seen a more consolidated opinion amongst Rangers fans before the game, looking at a lineup thinking, I don't feel good about this. Where's Raskin? Where's Cantwell? Why is Lundstrom playing? Why is Tillman playing? Why is Kamara playing? I think you can kind of see the logic behind it a little bit, in that it's the exact same lineup that went out against Hearts at Tynecastle and were fantastic in that game a couple of weeks ago. It's a formation that's designed to contain a midfield and give the opposition possession and look to contain and to set up to play over the top rather than through the lines. At least I think that's what Michael Beale's intention was. Although it became apparent pretty quickly that they wouldn't get much joy, as Celtic were strolling the midfield battle and easily finding ways to play through Rangers because they were standing off so much. I found the absence of Raskin alone baffling, given that he's, of the little that we've seen him so far, the 2 or 3 games, he does something that no other Rangers player does. This Rangers player, as we said 100 times over the season, is in desperate need of a refresh. You look at the lineup that started on Sunday, and Rangers lineup featured 7 players from the League Cup final in 2019. So that's, you know, 4 years ago, and you've essentially pretty much got the same starting 11 again still 4 years later. I think it just shows you how tired it is. Also, Malik Tillman, I don't think, was fully fit. He looked miles off it. John Lundstrom, let's face it, hasn't really been the same player this season that he was last season for Rangers, particularly in the Europa League. He's been taking painkilling injections for months. He hasn't really trained for the last couple of weeks. So why he started alone but lasted as long as he did, I just find absolutely baffling. The thing is, like, Michael Beale's still in his first season as a manager. Whether you like it or not, and you don't really get the time at either side of the Old Firm, they're going to make mistakes and they have to learn from mistakes. But I think the Rangers fans are just at a point where they feel it would be nice not to be making these mistakes in things like cup finals or really important league matches. I think this is a game that was ready-made for Raskin. I think Beale even made the point after the match that he didn't want to throw in Raskin and Cantwell too soon. I don't think that really washes. I mean, you look at someone like Rio Hatate, signed last January. I think he played 1 game maybe against Hearts, and then he was thrown into the Old Firm game a week later. played a blinder, man of the match, scored two goals. Like, they're just, if you're good enough, you're ready enough. And I think the fresh blood is what Rangers have craved all season. I find it baffling that they didn't start with any of that in the final. And by the time that they made the changes, the game was already 2-0. The game was gone.
Well, I do take your point on the experience aspect of it from the dugout side of things. Ange Postecoglou has achieved a lot in football. It's just that we're probably not so much familiar with those achievements because they've been so far away on the other side of the world. But if you compare what you've just said to Celtic's lineup, and it's just filled with people who Ange trusts. So if Raskin was ready-made for this type of game, Ange just knows that he's going to get the best out of his players. The only interesting point I thought was that Jota was playing more on the right-hand side when he's probably played more on the left. And it's just, you look at the back four, Taylor, Starfelt, Vickers, and Johnston, who's came in and done a great job. But McGregor, Hatate and Moy utterly bossed that midfield. There was no real fear for Celtic at any stage, other than that little 15 minutes when the typically Celtic got a little bit tired because they're so relentless in the intensity. But Rangers can't handle Celtic when they're in fourth gear, not even hit sixth gear. If you look at the last Celtic Rangers game, it was a bit fair to say that a draw was a fair result. But I think Celtic are so far ahead of Rangers in so many departments. I don't think this comparison that the gap has been closed is really true. I just thought the cup final was a real large measure and a one-off one game that you can look at both sides and say Celtic are way ahead of Rangers. And if this summer is going to be an important one for anyone, it's more so for Rangers. The chase is bigger than I've seen it for a good few years, in my opinion.
I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it was interesting having Tony and Jordan on the podcast last week and listening to that, because Jordan was trying to make the point that he doesn't think once the two squads are fully fit, that there's a huge amount between the squads and between the teams. And I don't think I disagree with that. I just think that there's such a tiredness there. There's a freshness about Celtic and everybody knows their role within the team. I personally don't think there's as big a gap as people say there are. You just need to keep in mind as well that Celtic might be heading for a record points total anyway. Jordan also made the point last week that Rangers could hit 100 points this season and still not even take it to the final day and win the championship. So it shows you the level that Celtic are at this season and have been under Postecoglou for almost 2 years now. So in trying to compete with that, there are obviously financial discrepancies there as well. But I don't think the gap is as big, but it will need a heck of a investment is needed in the summer from Rangers. But also, Beal needs to play the new players. He needs that fresh blood in the team.
Moving on to domestic matters, in the league, there was an absolutely horrific challenge in the St Johnstone-St Mirren game. It was Daniel Phillips on Ryan Flynn. And it's honestly one of those where you look at it and you just kind of, it's just no nice.
Exactly what you do when you watch it.
But interestingly enough, watching Sports Scene, was it Neil McCann and James McFadden turned around and said it wasn't even a yellow card? Oh man, I'm looking at it right now.
I know,
it's absolutely
horrific. I've seen it on repeat. No. It's so very clearly a red.
It's a red card. It's the reddiest red card you've ever seen. Yeah. It's a rouge card. It's so bad. It's not really in control. He goes over the guy's ankle. He could cause a really serious injury. Like, no matter what we slice that is a red card. I don't even know how it's up for debate. And for them to suggest it's not even a booking, there has to be a move away. Again, we're coming back to these things with the IFAB rules and all the nonsense around the handballs and stuff this season. It's so annoying. And these are two good pundits as well. I would say Neil McCann and James McFadden in the main. But they're examples of people who either don't know the rules or don't know the difference between, well, I personally wouldn't have given this. I don't like the rule, but the rule states that. Because the thing is, if in any league in the world, that is a red card. It might not have been when they were playing, but that is a red card by today's standards and rules.
That red card just before half time, and amazingly St Johnstone actually took the lead in the game, but it ended up sharing the points after Mr Alex Gogic, the hitman. That's what he looks like. He reminds me of the actual remember the game Hitman.
He's totally bald again, actually.
He just looks like a hitman. So that finished 1-1. But the goal of the weekend has to go to Motherwell, Laura. I always come to you in Motherwell with your connections. I know you're a Scotland fan, not just, affinities with Motherwell, but Slattery with a last-minute equalising free kick. You love free kicks, don't you, Laura?
You have absolutely done me dirty here. Absolutely love the fact that Motherwell got a last minute equaliser. I think this was a massive result, quite potentially the turning point of their season, actually. Just before we go on to the actual goal itself, I think psychologically this result is massive for them. There was a game just before Christmas when they were 2-0 up against Kilmarnock and then conceded 2 goals in 3 minutes. And I feel like that was sort of the catalyst to when things got really bad. And this has sort of bookended that slightly. It could potentially bookend it, because I think to get such a big goal at such a crucial time, it almost shapes the table now where, like, they're by no means mathematically safe. But it becomes now when they're sitting on 27 points, Ross County are just behind them in 10th place on 24, and then Killy on 24 and Dundee on 20. It becomes almost like they're looking up now rather than down. With St Johnstone 4 points ahead, you look up rather than 4 points behind. Yeah, Killy Slattery's free kick. I think everyone lost their minds over this at the time, and I'm just going to stick my one. Normally, a free kick's just a free kick. It's like taking a penalty. It's what he meant to do. He stood up there and he did his job.
The distance was pretty special, though. And what got me was it wasn't just the kind of the precision. It was the power, man. Like, the ball came flying back out of the net.
To me, free kicks are the impressive part of a free kick is the magnitude and importance of it. And yes, this had that. In terms of skill, though, I know Callum Slattery can do that, and he should. He's on the training pitch practicing them. So, well done for doing your job, Cal.
He did actually score against Kilmarnock in that game you mentioned, and that was a 10-man Kilmarnock reducing a 2-0 deficit to 2-2. So things still haven't really changed, even though all the men were on the pitch this time. All of the men. Best free kick you've seen in your lifetime?
Lee Griffiths, second against England.
Yeah, that was pretty special.
Or first, because they were both identical. But second for the sheer carnage that came after it, and the bruises that lasted a long time after it.
In fact, that was a moment in the pub, wasn't it, that we spoke about? I think Rangers got a free kick just outside the box in the exact same area that Lee Griffiths scored against Joe Hart in Hampden. Yeah, we wondered if that would have reared its ugly head.
Just a note on the Motherwell game at the weekend, Liam Kelly set a landmark milestone for himself. This game is 100 consecutive game for Motherwell, which is quite impressive. It's by no means an absolute like a Scottish football record or anything like that, because there are players that have done it in the past. There's quite a few that have into the high 100s, into the 200s even.
Wow.
But as far as I can see, no one's done it since 1987. So we're talking within Liam Kelly's lifetime anyway. As far as I can see, it's a record since the Scottish Premiership began. So that's something in itself.
It's also, it's immensely impressive, I think, in the modern game. There are definitely players that have had, ridiculous runs of, like you're saying, 100 odd games or high hundreds and into the 200s from the 1910s or the 1950s or the 1960s. You can kind of understand it a bit more then when there wasn't, players would spend their entire career at a club or something like that. But for a player that's come in and you can't hit the ground running any more than playing 100 games straight.
Well, that's the thing. It's also 100 out of 100. It's not like he's just picked up somewhere and went, oh, I'm going to run 100 games. It is literally, he has played every game since he walked in the door at Ford Park.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That is really impressive for him.
Rise, Sir Liam Kelly, Centurion. There you go.
I thought you were going to jump in a bit about Scotland's next number one. It's been a few pods since you've done that, Laura.
God damn it. Scotland's next number one.
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
After Dundee United's miserable 4-0 defeat to relegation rivals Ross County, and with American owner Mark Ogren in the stands to watch, the writing fairly was on the wall for manager Liam Fox. United are now looking for their third manager in a season, and the task of survival couldn't be a bigger ask. To sift through the debris, we're joined by Ronnie Costello from Dodie Fox Podcast. Ronnie, it was dismal in Dingwall on Saturday, shall we say.
Was it really that good?
Oh,
it was embarrassing, eh? For a game of that magnitude, and that's what gets served up, it's not good enough. It's worse than conceding 9 to Celtic. It's worse than 7 Altmark, because and I'm not playing down Ross County, but they're not on a par with those teams, and it felt worse. It generally felt worse. So yeah, it was horrific.
It's also the fact they're down there with you, battling in the same area as well. So it's not just the damage it does to you guys, it's the damage it does to the table as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's that, but you know, the six-pointer in February, you're thinking, I can't really get that worse. I can't get any worse. It got worse in 90 minutes. It got way worse. So, yeah, I mean, it made it worse. The fact we went out to the Cup to Kilmarnock, who are down beside us, and that was horrible. We then got beat from St Johnstone. Again, no totally beside us, but close to us. And you're thinking they're meant to be the easier games for you. But when you're at the bottom, you don't have any luck. You don't have any easy games. And we kind of help ourselves. Like, we just shoot ourselves on the foot every single game. I'm desperate. I keep saying it, and I'm like a broken record. I'm desperate for a team to score someone 35 yards, top bin, and I can't blame any player. But at the minute, he's no marking him. He's no tackled him. He's no won his battle. He's no cut that cross out.
Yeah.
He kind of take a touch. It's just, there's a, yeah, it's horrendous. It's been rough.
Quite frankly, I found the form of United this season kind of baffling, because I remember when we did the very first pod at the start of the season, we were looking at who we thought had done like some quite good business and everything. I was personally quite impressed by the players that United had brought in. You've got internationals there in Stephen Fletcher, and as the World Cup proved, like Aziz Bej, I think is a terrific player. Glenn Middleton, Dylan Levitt coming in permanently. I thought the business that they'd done was great. Even Craig Sibbald, I thought, was a decent addition from Livy. I always thought he was a good player. I mean, can you put your finger on what it is that's kind of gone wrong? I mean, is it something about the group of players? Can you put your finger on anything?
I think it's fans. The majority of fans, and me, myself included, really happy with the business in the summer, but it came quite clear quite early on that we were still light in some areas, some key areas. You know, since John DeFuchs went, we've never replaced that midfielder that sits in front of the defence, that if somebody's trying to go past them, they'll just kick them. They'll take the foul, they'll take the yellow card. I always thought we were light at right centre-back when we're trying to play a back three. We still probably needed another striker in around Stephen Fletcher with a bit of pace. So granted, we did sign good players. Like, that's definitely not for debate for me. I think we did sign good players. But I also didn't mean we signed a good team.
Yeah.
And the midfield battle's been quite tough, because, you know, Sybil's been in there, June's been in there, Levitt's been in there. But it's been hard to find what one works. And when it's worked, we've won games, you know, Alkmaar at home and Kilmarnock 4-0, Aberdeen 4-0. Brilliant victories, great play, everyone up for it. And then it's just back to, you know, somebody's making a mistake or we're imbalanced. Now, we did sign good players. But again, January, young lad up on loan for Huddersfield, that was it. So yeah, it's been really frustrating.
I want to talk a wee bit about the AGM, because there was some quite crazy quotes that came out from that. First, I want to touch on just where you're talking about the kind of relegation battle and stuff. One of the quotes that came from Mark Ogren was, "It's not the end of the world if we get relegated, because we'll come straight back up." Has he got a short memory?
First thing, he didn't say that. That's not a direct
quote. Okay,
course.
So has that been misreported? Has that been taken completely out of context?
A little bit, yeah. To cut a real long story short, Smile, the show about Jim McLean's at the Rep just now, and we got asked to do a Q&A with some legends after it. A question come up that was based on the AGM about relegation that we asked, and we were then asked to correct that factually with what was actually said. So the actual line was something, again, I'm paraphrasing slightly, but it was along the lines of, "We will be in the best position to come straight back up," as in the budget would be right, the team, all these kind of things. So I think there was a little bit of a miss, because as soon as I read it, I thought, there's no way. I mean, you're not a successful businessman, and you're not ruthless, and you've not done this. And then I just didn't believe that he said it at the time. Then I thought, well, you just never know, because it's probably the first time that he's been over and it's not been as positive and great because of our position, because of stuff like that, because of the January transfer window and everything. But yeah, that was a surprise. But yeah, he didn't quite say, it was taken out of context a little bit.
Do you have confidence in the hierarchy at Dundee United, in the sense that it's good that you've obviously cleared that up, that there's not some crazy quotes coming out of the AGM, but, you know, there's still a lot of dissent amongst Dundee United fans, and directed at one man in particular, Tony Asgard, who first came in working under Mickey Mellon. It looked like the relationship was really rosy with those two, and Fuchs was one of the key players that he brought in, who was excellent. So do we think that it's a bit unfair to tar him with a negative brush? Do you think this is the right management team to make the next appointment and to paint a brighter future for Dundee United?
I think, me personally, see right now, when there's only 12 games to go, we need to get a manager in place. This is, like, crucial. There's only 12 games. it's 12 games, and then they can look at whatever they're doing behind the scenes or whatever. I mean, it might dictate depending on what league you're in, but yeah, that has to be first and foremost about what goes on. You have to get that right. Have to.
And what about Tony? Like, do you feel like the treatment's unfair?
I mean, I would like to be in his shoes. Like, that cannot be easy. Like, it can't be easy for a manager getting that, or players. Like, it can't be easy for anybody. He's a big boy, he's thick-skinned. You know, he might be, I don't know. He'll deal with the way he deals with it, I imagine. I mean, it's happened now for a wee while, and I think, let's say, first, they've got to just win games, eh? I think that, for me, as a fan, just got to be winning games right now, because there's just not enough time. You could go and say, oh, but so-and-so that works in the shop does this. Nah, like, right now, the team needs to get some points on the board, and then they can deal with it. But again, there's a game coming up. You've got two games in quick succession. We play Saturday, then Wednesday. Then there's obviously the break for a weekend. I don't think they can wait. I think they need to try and get stuff moving now.
So who's the more long-term manager, Neil Lennon or Craig Levein?
Box office, the two of them. Box office.
Love it.
Yeah, listen, Craig Levein's obviously got a, you know, he's held in high regard given the job he done. It's very, very similar. I mean, he come in a lot earlier, obviously, October time, the last time, but we were bottom of the league. We'd just been beat 5-1 for Falkirk. No one should ever get beat 5-1 for Falkirk. Like, again, I keep mentioning 12 games, but there's no long to go. I think Neil Lennon, I mean, he'll take doors off of hinges in that dressing room. So he's a bit, I mean, you know what? He's a passionate man. Certainly, I hated him when he was a manager at Celtic and Hibs, but probably because he's a bit of a winner. Like, he knows how to win. Yeah, he's box office. Craig Levein's really interesting. Really, really interesting. We had him, we actually had him on in January, actually. We had a bit of a live show. So he was in front of 400 people in a theatre, and he was absolutely brilliant value. But not
he is
once.
Good value.
Did I ever think he could be the new manager of United? Not once did I think that in that chat I had one, but I was very surprised when that came out. Very surprised, because it's not a name that I even thought of. You know, I was throwing names at Paul yesterday when we were recording, and his name never come up, and that's not any disrespect. It just didn't come up.
People forget he got the Scotland job after the job he did at United as well. Like, that's just how big an impact he can make at clubs who are struggling as well, because he did the same at Hearts, albeit in a higher role, kind of instructing Robbie Nielsen. So maybe he is the long term.
Listen, there might be a bit of unfinished business there as well. He left United, you know, I think it was December. I'm pretty sure it was around December time. And United obviously going to win the Scottish Cup, which is amazing. But, I mean, he said to us that no one was more delighted than him for United to win the Cup that year. And I just think that maybe sometimes he just thinks, you know, I had maybe 18 months on his deal and he never done what he wanted to. Maybe he does think there's a wee bit of that. I don't know. Maybe the way it finished at Hearts, he's frustrated. But I know for hearing people today and seeing people, right, that when he went into that Hearts role again, like, he done really well. I'll see what happened. It could be an interesting week. It could be an interesting week, but it'd be great to have someone in place way before 6 o'clock on Saturday as the kickoff.
This is why I say about Tony Asghar earlier on, I think he's a really astute guy. I think he knows that, like, the panic button has to be pressed, but it needs to be an astute panic button. Not that I know anything, but that's what I think about Tony.
Somebody needs time. It's not a short-term project, I don't think. I think whoever it is, there has to be a plan in place. Because again, it's different if you're sitting mid-table, you've got 5 games to go, you're not going to win a league, you're not going to get relegated. You can get somebody to help you out to the end of the season. This is massive.
Ronnie, just to kind of finish off, just looking, like, long term here, if the worst does happen this season and you do get relegated, what's the kind of financial danger involved in this? Because as we said earlier, look, United have struggled to come back up on the first attempt before. Can they afford to do that for a couple of seasons down there again?
Thanks for that.
Bloody hell, Laura, leave the man alone.
Finish
bad enough with sticking the boot in. Goodness me.
I might get a pie on a roll at Arlo on a Friday night, right enough. I mean, I would hope now there's more of an understanding, more of a budget in place. I mean, I would hope you come right back up if you can, but there's a lot of players with contracts beyond the season. I think there's six, there's maybe 4 or 5 first teamers, I think. There's maybe 9 or 10 out of contract, but the rest are contracted next season, the season after, probably on good money, certainly Premier League money. They're not on Championship wages. I would doubt there's relegation clauses and stuff. I mean, if I was a player and got to say, no, there's a relegation clause, would you be signing? I'm not so sure. So I think there'll be a lot of questions to ask if that happens. And we need to get to the split and be in touch and distance still. We kind of go into the split. 6 points behind 9 points because you're as well shutting the doors. And then the day when you start winning games and putting the ball in the net, neither of which we've done very well.
That's it for another week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Finn. Cheers to Ronnie Costello as well from the Dodie Fox podcast. Absolute class to have him on. Aye, we're done. Cheerio. See you later. Go and listen to something else now. Bye.